My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I said yesterday, which was our first show of the year and the first show of the week, that as soon as we had kind of catch-up data from the holiday weekend about COVID, we would look at the numbers, and that it's expected that the numbers are off the wall, shocking, appalling numbers. And indeed they are when it comes to cases. The numbers are appallingly bad when it comes to testing in terms of the difficulty of getting a test and the extremely high positivity rate of tests, showing how incredibly widespread this Omicron variant is. But we continue to see death numbers that, while they are still tragic, are making us hopeful that this Omicron variant is going to burn through the population in maybe the next 4 to 6 weeks without a proportionately high death toll, and then go. Now, what happens after that? There are three or four different perspectives, which we will eventually talk about. But let's take a look at the numbers. And they are just incredible. How contagious this thing is really, really hard to believe. In the United States now, a vertical increase, and we'll look at the exact numbers. If you look at the day by day, consecutive days of nearly 600,000 cases in a single day. And a lot of the backlog data is still being cataloged, but these are incredible numbers. At this point, if we have 500,000 cases a day that we know about, we would expect that the real number of infections is between 1 million and 1.5 million actual infections a day, to account for home tests that don't show up in these data, and to account for people who never get tested. 20% positivity rates in many states and big cities. If we look over at this is death. Let's not go there yet. If we look at global cases, we see that global cases are now reaching 2 million cases a day that we know about, And with the difficulty of testing that also exists in many other countries, some countries have great testing, some countries don't. We can also safely estimate the real number of infections. If officially it's 2 million cases a day, there's probably between 4 and 6 million infections per day or even more. If you think about just the U.S. numbers, actually, but before we get to that, article from CNBC, U.S. reports over 1 million new daily COVID cases. The U.S. has reported a record single day number of COVID cases with more than a million new infections. A total of 1.02 million new cases were reported Monday yesterday per Johns Hopkins University as the highly infectious Omicron variant continues to spread throughout the country and beyond. The U.S. also has the highest 7-day average of new daily cases in any country tracked by Johns Hopkins. This brings the total confirmed cases to 56 million, over 827,000 deaths. Now, the record single day total may be due in part to delayed reporting from the holiday weekend. So that's what's really important to look at. When you might be saying, David, wait, so if a million were reported yesterday, why does a Worldometer say that it was only 426,000? A million were reported yesterday. Some were from January 3rd. Some were from January 2nd. Some were from January 1st and December 31st. So we're rapidly getting up there. For a moment, let's imagine that the real number of cases, just to make the math easy, is 1.6 million a day. Why do I pick 1.6 million? Well, the U.S. has a population of about 330 million. So 1.6 million, 1.65 million would be exactly half of 1% per day. If you start doing the math and you think about, well, some people, if you have three shots of Moderna or Pfizer, you're about 75% protected from symptomatic infection. So when we think about the population, if there's some people who have recovered from prior COVID and have protection, some protection from Omicron, it's diminished, but some protection from Omicron, you have some people then who, even if exposed, aren't going to get it. You then have people who have three shots, which gives you some significant protection against Omicron, although vaccinated people are getting this all over the place. We know that. So you've got that population. And then if every 2 days, 1% of the population is getting it, you start doing the math. 30 days of this high case rate is going to have most of the country exposed. Many will get it. Many will be asymptomatic. Some will be exposed and fight it off thanks to vaccination or prior immunity. In 30 days, there can only be one path for Omicron, and it's down very quickly. And we're seeing that in South Africa. Now, could there be another variant? Of course. Could there be all sorts of different things? Of course. But when you have something this contagious, where every 2 days, 1% of your population is getting it in a country this big, and you have some immunity in the population, and you have some vaccine protection in the population, at some point, something has to break. And so the cautious optimism is that this will get us much closer to the end of the pandemic phase. What about deaths? The good news continues to be that deaths are not spiking. The Omicron spike in cases started right around Thanksgiving. And while there has been an increase in deaths, the average daily going from about 900 up to about 1,200, 1,300, cases are dramatically higher and the deaths are not yet spiking. And it's been a while. We're into 5 weeks now. In South Africa, Omicron led to a case increase of 150x a day, 150 times increase in cases, and deaths only doubled. Now, South Africa is different in a lot of ways, much younger population than the U.S., as I said yesterday, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact that deaths are not spiking in proportion with cases is very good. Globally, deaths continue to decline. At the start of the Omicron spread, global deaths were at about 7,000 a day. And now global deaths are under 6,000 a day. We're cautious. We're cautious. But this is reason to be cautiously optimistic. One last thing on this. The CDC has shortened the waiting period for Pfizer COVID boosters to 5 months. Remember, the CDC had said, get your third dose at least 6 months after your second dose. Now the CDC is saying 5 months. And it is believed that part of the reason is that that third dose is so much more effective at preventing symptomatic illness from Omicron that the recommendation is changing. So that is a very good thing. These are the numbers as we have them right now. We're going to continue to follow them. It's both appalling, the difficulty of getting tests and the number of cases. It also is a sign to say, wow, if cases are this high and we're not seeing deaths spike dramatically, that's a really, really good sign. We will follow the science. One of the really sick things that's happening in the United States is that instead of everybody coming together to get beyond the pandemic, to encourage people to, hey, if you have a reason to go and get tested, go and get tested. And let's support testing and let's grow the number of places where you can get tested. There are people harassing those going and getting a COVID test. I'm going to play a clip for you in a moment of anti-vaxxers, COVID truthers, and other types of conspiracists in New York City yelling conspiracy theories at people who are trying to get COVID tests at one of these corner pop-up clinics. Now, we don't know exactly when the clip was filmed. The clip was recently released. But from the way people are dressed, it doesn't seem like it's that cold in New York City. Now, at the same time, a couple days ago, it was in the mid 50s in New York City. So this may be very recent or it may be a little bit older. We don't know. But let's take a look at the video. And what you're going to hear, if you're just listening, is people yelling conspiracy theories and berating people getting tested. You get tested. Why? So you know if you should stay home and not give this thing to other people. It's a good thing to do. And here are anti-vaxxers and conspiracists attacking those getting tested.
Shut it down. These are faulty. The PCR test. Yeah.
This is what's creating all these fake numbers and creating more fear. So
these fake PCR tests are creating fake numbers, which are creating fear. I'll address this substantively in a moment, by the way.
Mullis.
There's this horrible virus.
Do you guys quarantine whenever there's a positive case? You have to quarantine?
Using fake testing.
Fake numbers. Look who's Dr. Kevin Mullis,
people. You're literally signing your life away for nothing.
Do you guys know who's Dr. Kevin Mullis, the inventor of the PCR test? Dr. Kevin Mullis,
Harry Mullis invented the PCR test. The test that you are about to take, Harry Mullis said that the PCR test is not accurate
at all. You guys need to
and
look it up.
You cannot use it to figure out if someone has a disease or not.
Even if it's positive, is that an indication?
You guys listen to the person that invented your test?
Getting tested leads to propaganda.
That's right.
And a positive test doesn't mean that you're sick.
God, there's a bajillion cases. I wonder where all those bajillion COVID cases came from.
It came from a fake test. Getting a medical procedure on a dirty, rat-infested Manhattan street corner? Getting a medical procedure? Carrie Mullis, PCR maker. Carrie Mullis.
All right, so you get the idea. Obviously, police should be called in these situations. And there's a bunch of different things to talk about. First of all, if you believe in my body, my choice, leave people who want to get a test alone. Don't harass them. Let them get a test. Nobody's forcing you to get a test. What happened to my body, my choice? But let's address substantively what they're talking about, because I keep getting emails about this as well, saying the inventor of PCR said the PCR test isn't accurate. Let me explain to you exactly what is the truth about this, because it has been misstated. A PCR test measures the presence of certain viral proteins. Okay. It is true that I could imagine that someone coughs on me who has COVID. Okay. I breathe in some viral proteins and they are now in my nose. I get swabbed. The swab is tested and it's positive for viral proteins, but I'm triple vaccinated. My body could be fighting off those viral particles. And the viral particles, thank goodness, don't replicate and I don't get an infection. Certainly, it's conceivable that if you swab me at the exact moment where those viral particles that someone coughed on me are in my throat, that I get a positive test and I never get sick because my body fights it off. That's possible. What the PCR test measures is the presence of that virus in the body. It can't definitively tell you, are you sick with COVID? Do you have an active contagious infection? Or did you have just enough viral particles in your system to trigger a positive test and then you didn't actually get sick? That's true. Generally speaking, the timing of that specific situation I mentioned is very, very rare. And it doesn't mean that PCR tests shouldn't be used, can't be used, aren't of diagnostic value. It is true that you could have the presence of virus and not be actively infected. It's a very small portion of people, and it's not really relevant to testing strategy in the way that these people want it to be. Now, unfortunately, this anti-testing stuff is actually spreading. In Florida, Florida has a pretty wacky Surgeon General, Joseph Ladapo. He says it's time to unwind this testing psychology prioritized by the federal government. You don't need to go and get tested. He's saying do less testing. Don't be so worried about going and testing. Here he is.
We're going to be working to unwind the sort of testing psychology
right.
that our federal leadership has managed to, unfortunately, get most of the country in over the last 2 years.
Right. Testing problem? Now, just the federal government is making too many people want to get tested. Let's unwind it. We don't need tests and we don't need testing. Wow, what a strategy. By the way, have you seen Florida's numbers?
We need to unwind this testing planning and living one's life around testing. Without it, we're going to be sort of stuck in the same cycle. So, you know, it's really time for people to be living, to, you know, to make the decisions they want regarding vaccination.
Yeah.
To enjoy the fact that many people have natural immunity.
There you go. Oh, man. Meanwhile, Florida, you'll be told Florida's doing great. Florida hospitalizations are up 200%, even if Omicron is indeed less severe on a case by case percentage basis, as we believe it is. Florida, with a skewing older population, does see plus 200% in terms of hospitalization. So a lot of horrible backwards things going on with something as benign as testing. And that does not bode particularly well. Let me know what you're seeing in your community. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. As many of you know, we've been taking the real kind of systemic authoritarian risk in the United States much more seriously lately. And when we talked about the possibility of a repeat in 2024 of what the Republican Party under Trump attempted in 2020, it's no laughing matter. We also talked earlier this week about the warning from three retired military generals that if you had the ranking upper echelon of the military supportive of something like what Donald Trump tried to do in 2020, you could have very different results because you could have a military involved coup in the United States. There is now another new commentary from a Canadian professor who is warning that the United States could actually fall to a right-wing dictatorship by 2030. This is a very interesting article, not very long. I encourage you to read it. We're going to link to it. And it says that a Canadian political science professor has warned that the U.S. could be under a right-wing dictatorship by the end of the decade. This is Thomas Homer Dixon, founding director of the Cascade Institute at Royal Roads University in British Columbia. He is urging Canada to safeguard itself against the possible collapse of American democracy. He wrote in the Globe and Mail, by 2025, American democracy could collapse, causing extreme domestic political instability, including widespread civil violence. By 2030, if not sooner, the country could be governed by a right-wing dictatorship. Much of the professor's hypothesis centers around the idea of Trump returning to the White House in 2024. Trump is widely expected to run for office again. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. It's considered that he may. And Mr. Homer Dixon anticipates Republican-held state legislatures will refuse to accept a Democratic presidential win. That is a concern. And we've talked about that so many times now. This idea that they wanted to push on Pence for January 6, 2020, and we're almost at the 1 year anniversary of that day. The idea was states. So I'll break it down from the beginning. Before the election, say you're worried that there's going to be a lot of voter fraud because of mail-in ballots. After the election, when Joe Biden won a bunch of these states, they claim we can't actually trust the results. And then the third part, which they didn't do, they wanted Mike Pence to do, but they didn't do, would have been Mike Pence or whoever is vice president. But it was Pence in 2020 at the time of the certification of those electoral votes, of the acceptance of those electoral votes. Rather, the certification was on December 14th or so. January 6th was we're going to tally these, for Pence to say, we don't believe that these are genuine results. So instead of allowing the Democratic electors from Arizona to vote, we are going to seat an alternate slate of electors to vote for Trump. That was the idea. The concern now is they had the idea in 2020, but they didn't do it, that they're actually going to do it in 2024. Homer Dixon is a well-respected scholar of violent conflict. He says Canada should be on guard against the unfolding crisis in Washington, D.C., spreading northward. He said, quote, a terrible storm is coming from the south, and Canada is woefully unprepared. Over the past year, we've turned our attention inward, distracted by the challenges of COVID, reconciliation, and the accelerating effects of climate change. But, he says, now we must focus on the urgent problem of what to do about the likely unraveling of democracy in the U.S. We need to start by recognizing the magnitude of the danger. If Trump is reelected, even under the more optimistic scenarios, the economic and political risks to our country will be innumerable. Some might view such warnings as hyperbolic, but the political scientist is steadfast in his view that a new Trump administration with little in the way of internal opposition could seek to deliberately undermine its northern neighbor. Canada is worried, and we're worried about the same thing. And the crazy thing is that we sort of just have to wait and see what happens. And what I mean by that is Trump was impeached twice, not convicted. Nothing really came of it. Corruption in government isn't changing for the better in any real way. We got a warning from three retired generals yesterday that if the military were on the side of what Trump wanted to do, they might actually have been able to make it happen, and it could happen in 2024. And unfortunately, most Americans don't even realize what's going on. I want to play for you. This is really interesting. This is a clip from Joe Rogan talking to Jordan Peterson, and it applies to this. They are talking about COVID guidelines. This is the crazy thing. They're talking about COVID guidelines. We're talking about actual authoritarianism from a government. And even though what they are talking about doesn't apply, okay, this actually does apply to what's going on right now.
I just don't understand how it gets to the...
And actually, they may not even have been talking about COVID here. They may have been talking about... It's not even clear what they're talking about. They're not talking about Trumpism and authoritarianism of that sense, but it would apply.
Well, things get to terrible places one tiny step at a time. Mm. You know, if I encroach on you and I'm sophisticated about it, I'm going to encroach 2 millimeters. I'm going to encroach right to the point where you start to protest. Then I'm going to stop. Then I'm going to wait. Then you're going to calm down. Then I'm going to encroach again right to the point where you protest. Then I'm going to stop. Then I'm going to wait. And I'm just going to do that forever. And before you know it, you're going to be back 3 miles from where you started, and you'll have done it one step at a time. And then you'll go, oh, how
I understand. Rogan, this is from a little bit ago, but Rogan posted it yesterday, pretty obviously signaling that it's about COVID. But it applies perfectly to January 6th, the coup attempt, and what we may be facing.
Get here. And the answer was, well, I pushed you a little farther than you should have gone, and you agreed. And so then I pushed you a little farther than you should have gone again, and you agreed. And if anybody's interested in this sort of process, and this is a horrifying book, if you want to read about how this process works, you can read a book called Ordinary Men by Robert Browning.
Okay. So it perfectly, perfectly, perfectly applies to what we are seeing now. And it's not that people necessarily accept, but it's that not enough is being done to stop it from happening again. And incredibly relevant commentary from Jordan Peterson not applied to what it should be applied to. A very big breaking news. Donald Trump, Ivanka Trump, and Donald Trump Jr. have been subpoenaed by the New York Attorney General. This is we are talking about Letitia James, who is a Democrat. Letitia James has been investigating the Trump Organization for possible financial crimes. And we have learned yesterday that subpoenas have been issued for Donald Trump, Ivanka Trump, and Donald Trump Jr. Now, what is at issue here, as a reminder, is the is it scamming? Is it lying? It's the widely at this point accepted allegation that we heard from Michael Cohen and others that Donald Trump would lie one way or the other. The Trump Organization would deceive one way or the other about the value of properties in order to achieve whatever goal they had. So basically the way it works is as follows. Imagine that you have a building that's actually worth $25 million. Just as an example, let's say you have a $25 million building. If you want to get a loan and you want a $35 million loan, when the bank says, what's your collateral? You say, I've got this building that's worth $50 million. Now, it's really only worth $25, but you say it's worth $50, so you can safely give me a loan of $35 million against it. But when the tax authorities come to you and they say, hey, this building, it's worth $25 million, so you're going to have to pay property tax on the basis of a $25 million value, you say, no. This building's only worth $10 million. This is a crappy little building. And you argue that it is worth less in order to reduce your tax liability. And that is, of course, fraud. It is fraud to do that. And that is one of the elements that is being investigated by the Attorney General, Letitia James. They have previously requested that Donald Trump appear. We have now learned that they have issued a subpoena for Donald Trump and two of his adult children to appear. And they have already announced their plans to refuse. ABC is reporting eldest children won't comply with subpoenas from New York Attorney General. Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump are now respondents in the civil case. They have refused to comply with subpoenas issued by the New York State Attorney General's office as it conducts a civil investigation into the way the family real estate business valued its holding. A dispute has arisen between the OAG and the individual Trump parties regarding the subpoenas. The document filed jointly by New York Attorney General Letitia James and an attorney for the Trump Organization said Don Jr. and Ivanka will now be named as respondents in the inquiry, which parallels a criminal investigation by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. As her investigation into financial dealing with the Trump Organization continues, Attorney General James is seeking interviews under oath of Donald Trump, Trump Jr., and Ivanka. Despite numerous attempts to delay our investigation by the Trump Organization, we are confident that our questions will be answered and the truth will be uncovered because no one is above the law. Donald Trump Jr. and Ivanka Trump sought to quash the subpoenas Monday evening in a motion. Alan Feuerfoss, the attorney representing the Trump children, questioned the motives. Her office is also involved in the criminal investigation of Trump. He wrote, the goal of the subpoenas is all too clear. She seeks to circumvent the entire grand jury process and nullify moving parties' most fundamental constitutional and statutory rights by requesting they provide non-immunized testimony to the Office of the Attorney General when they and the District Attorney of New York are jointly conducting a grand jury investigation. So there's a couple different legal opinions here. One legal opinion is the ability of Congress to enforce subpoenas is somewhat vague. But the ability here to enforce subpoenas is unquestioned. There is no legal question as to the ability of the ability to enforce these subpoenas. But at the same time, they can show up and invoke their Fifth Amendment rights. And there are some limitations to that. One lawyer I spoke to said, you know, you can really only invoke your Fifth Amendment rights when it is reasonable to believe that speaking could actually incriminate you, that there are circumstances where what you are being asked about could not reasonably be considered to incriminate you, and thus invoking your Fifth Amendment right would not be okay. Here, it genuinely does seem that they may have been involved in criminality. And so the likelihood that if they were pushed and forced to respond to the subpoena and provide testimony, that they would invoke their Fifth Amendment rights. If you ask 10 different lawyers, there's 10 different opinions about this. And so ultimately, we have to wait and see. But much like all of the other things we've seen so far, this may also get no traction. But the fact that there were subpoenas is certainly noteworthy. And over the next 24 to 48 hours, we may well learn more about the fate of these subpoenas. Some say the walls are closing in. I still don't think Trump sees a day of jail or prison. I just don't see it. I'm not going to blow smoke in your nose or up anywhere of yours. We'll have more coverage of this on our Instagram, which you can find at David Pakman Show. Leave a comment there and let me know if you think anything will come of this. Yesterday, we talked about radical Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene being banned from Twitter for her fifth strike, spreading disinformation. And I told you the details of it. And we mentioned, you know, when these things happen, it's, of course, correct. But they immediately turn it into I'm the victim. They immediately throw out their principles of businesses should be allowed to do what they want as long as it's not illegal. It's the same tired routine. And now, unfortunately, it's scaling up even more because Marjorie Taylor Greene has been suspended from Facebook just hours after the Twitter ban. This one does not appear to be permanent. The congresswoman claimed data showed the COVID-19 vaccine was unsafe. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the right-wing congresswoman famous for her support of conspiracy theories about the 2020 election, COVID-19 and other issues, has been temporarily suspended from Facebook hours after being banned permanently from Twitter. The congresswoman confirmed her suspension in a Telegram post, calling the company's decision beyond censorship of free speech. Beyond censorship of speech. Her suspension appeared to result from the same post that got her a final fifth strike from Twitter, which led to her account's deactivation, a post claiming that vaccine injury and death reports gathered by a reporting service operated by the FDA proved that the government was ignoring large numbers of deaths resulting from the vaccine. Now, that's untrue, of course. In reality, the data used by the congresswoman contained anecdotal reports unverified by the FDA. Clinical trials have shown the vaccine can have mild side effects and a handful of serious side effects that are much rarer. Ms. Greene originally posted a message on both platforms pointing to a large number of reports of injury or death among COVID vaccine recipients as evidence that the federal government was ignoring high amounts of COVID vaccine deaths. This has become, you know, a favorite among the anti-vax people. Now, I'm really, obviously she deserves to be banned. The ban from Twitter is permanent. The ban from Facebook is temporary. I'm conflicted only in the sense that these bans are correct, but immediately used to the advantage of these individuals. And we can't really do anything about that. I mean, when people misunderstand what free speech is, when people misunderstand what censorship is, when people claim to hold values of businesses being able to do what's best for them until it conflicts with what is convenient for them, we can't really do anything about the fact that people like Marjorie Taylor Greene will weaponize these bans. But now comes the onslaught of the right wing pundits confusing the Constitution with the terms of service of a private company. Here comes the martyrdom and the entire thing. Will she say this violates HIPAA? I don't think so. She's known for talking about HIPAA, but I don't think she will actually pull that here. But this all plays into the narrative. And for all we know, some of these people, maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene, are deliberately breaching what at this point they have to know are the terms of service of these companies in order to get banned, in order to claim that they are being censored to their base so that they will raise money. It is, after all, an election year now in 2022. Obviously, Marjorie Taylor Greene and her ilk deserve to be banned from these platforms. I'm not contesting that at all. But they have started to use these bans almost like Purple Hearts in the culture war. She was banned from Twitter. It's the equivalent of I went and I fought for my country, in this case, her side, by tweeting disinformation, and they banned me. And the ban is held up almost like a Purple Heart medal in their mind. They love being what they call persecuted, and they immediately start fundraising off of it. And it is, after all, 10 months until Marjorie Taylor Greene's re-election election. And it is, I, I, I'm not saying don't ban them. I'm merely reminding everybody about the ways in which they will immediately try to benefit from those bans. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, I mean, in all likelihood, is going to sail to re-election easily. We'll look at some of those poll numbers for her on Friday. It's not going to make a difference in that sense, but they see these as worthy injuries sustained in fighting the culture war that they have created. One other really funny thing is Facebook has been like a primary source of not, I don't want to say source. Facebook has been a primary disseminator of COVID disinformation by allowing so much of it over the last year and a half. And it's funny that now all of a sudden they're banning Marjorie Taylor Greene for exactly that reason. But they did ban her. It's temporary. She'll be back on. But I expect the fundraising emails to go out very, very soon saying they banned me. Give me money so I can fight for you and medical freedom and all this different stuff. Here's something really interesting. This is sort of related to the Marjorie Taylor Greene Twitter and Facebook ban. About, what was it, like a month ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that, I played a video clip for you of Republican Congressman Dan Crenshaw, who is a Trump guy. There's no doubt about it. Dan Crenshaw is a Trump guy, criticizing the so-called Freedom Caucus of the House of Representatives, which is a very Trumpy caucus, saying these people are performance artists. And they are not, at the end of the day, really the people that voted in support of what Donald Trump wanted. This conflict between Crenshaw and people like Marjorie Taylor Greene is now like two trains barreling towards each other, because after this ban stunt from Marjorie Taylor Greene, by stunt, I mean how she reacted to it, Dan Crenshaw has much more directly attacked her. And Marjorie Taylor Greene has now turned on him. So let me kind of explain it all to you. In the immediate, hold on, let me get this all looking correct here. In the immediate aftermath of her being banned, Dan Crenshaw posted that Marjorie scoffed at the notion of supporting anti-censorship legislation is indicative of her true intent to remain a victim. She doesn't want solutions, and she doesn't care if you get censored. She just wants to be a victim so she can keep asking you for campaign donations. It's a scam. Dan Crenshaw is 110% correct here. He's 110% correct. Now, understand that what he was advocating for was seriously heavy regulation of platforms like Twitter and Facebook. So he is a hypocrite in the sense that he is part of the party that says we should do as little regulation of business as possible. Regulating businesses, socialism. He's talked on the Joe Rogan show about his belief about what socialism is, and it's a very, very wrong belief. So he was ignoring his supposedly sincerely held beliefs about a light government regulatory touch, saying, let's regulate these companies. But he is correctly pointing out that Marjorie Taylor Greene had the opportunity to support anti-censorship, as they call it, legislation, and that what she is doing is a scam to raise campaign contributions. He's completely right. He also posted, I think this is on his Instagram, hey, by the way, Marjorie, isn't this you? This was the moment you went for a few drinks instead of voting on the NDAA. Before bringing up missed votes, you might want to check your own record. This is after Marjorie Taylor Greene said to Dan Crenshaw, hey, you've missed votes as well. This is a picture of Marjorie Taylor Greene sitting at a bar when apparently voting was taking place on NDAA. The substance of this matters less than the fact that two pro-Trump Republicans, that's what they are fighting with each other. Crenshaw went on to say, hey, Marjorie, if suggesting we should follow Trump policy instead of Biden mandates makes you mad, then you might be a Democrat or just an idiot. So very big attacks, Trump on Trump violence. Crenshaw then posted, guess some people woke up today and tried to compete for biggest idiot on the internet. Then going on to say, seeing a lot of manufactured outrage by some people lately. They're worried they're losing their grip on your attention because they are. They lash out in the hopes you'll pay attention to them. Kind of sad, really. Dan Crenshaw is totally right here about what Marjorie Taylor Greene is doing. These are what we call, what I call ASBs, attention-seeking behaviors. And Crenshaw went on to say, and Marjorie, instead of playing the victim about censorship, maybe use your position as a legislator to help pass legislation against censorship. Luckily, I've already done all the hard work for you and drafted a bill that would change Section 230 to prohibit political censorship. Want to co-sponsor before I introduce it? Or do you prefer to keep up with petty and childish attacks? Your call. Marjorie Taylor Greene completely then losing it on Dan Crenshaw, saying Dan Crenshaw is posting creepy stalking pictures of me, referring to the picture from the bar, and harassing me to co-sponsor his big tech bill that he says stop censorship. But his bill actually gives more protection to online porn companies. Very, very weird thing to post. And then lastly, she wrote, no thanks, Dan. We need to get rid of porn. I am busy reading other Republican stop big tech censorship bills. Gosh, and to think all of this started when I just disagreed with him when he said FEMA should be doing mass COVID testing and working in hospitals. All I said is, no, we don't want FEMA doing any of that. And hospitals need to hire back unvaccinated healthcare workers. Then poof, I'm kicked off Twitter. Did I offend Dan's globalist friends at the World Economic Forum? This is really great. I have to tell you guys, I wish that the left was more competently preparing for 2022 and 2024. I think the left may be heading for a disaster, but Trumpists fighting with Trumpists is a really, really good thing. And just to remind everybody, here's that original clip where Dan Crenshaw seemed to start expressing some disdain for the grifters like Marjorie Taylor Greene and others without naming them directly. Remember this?
Supporting these two. There's actually other veterans in Morgan's race. There's other front runners. But why support these two? Well, because I've been in Congress for almost 3 years now. There's two types of members in Congress.
Right.
There's performance artists and there's legislators. Now, the performance artists are the ones that get all the attention. They're the ones you think are more conservative because they know how to say slogans real well. They know how to recite the lines that they know that our voters want to hear. Let me tell you guys something. In the first 2 years of Trump's presidency, when Republicans were in control, when every single time we were voting on Donald Trump's agenda, who do you think was at the top of that list voting with Trump, and who do you think was at the bottom?
Yep.
A lot of names you would recognize were at the bottom of that list. A lot of names you would recognize are at the top of that list. Number two is, it's probably going to make you cringe a little bit, it's Adam Kinzinger. Voted with Trump almost 99%. He was number two.
So the important thing, the important takeaway here is that these are all Trumpists in some sense. Marjorie Taylor Greene is a Trumpist in the way that she has completely abandoned even talking about policy, spreads lies, disinformation. It's kind of like the cartoonish weaponized Trumpist. But what Dan Crenshaw reminds us is that a lot of the people that we on the left might say, they're not that bad. Liz Cheney. Wow. She said Biden really won. That's really great. Adam Kinzinger. Hey, he was willing to vote to convict Trump on impeachment. He was willing to support impeachment of Donald Trump. He's a member of the House, not the Senate. And we say, wow, these people are kind of more reasonable. They vote with Trump all the time, all the time. And so they are not our political allies. Dan Crenshaw is absolutely right. Let's hope that this Trump on Trump civil war continues, because the left needs something to help us along this year. So I have not talked about the AOC Miami trip because, quite frankly, I find it all pretty uninteresting. But a bunch of you have asked me to comment on the coverage of it. And I do think there are a couple of interesting things there. So the backstory on this, as I understand it, and again, I care so little about it that I'm more interested in the reaction than the story. As I understand it, over the New Year's weekend, Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her partner, her boyfriend, her husband, I don't know, the guy she's with, they went down to Miami. I think she has family there. And she was photographed eating outdoors without a mask. Some right wing commenters focused on the fact that she escaped liberal New York and D.C. to go to conservative Florida. OK, not a super interesting analysis. I mean, Miami is like the most left place in Florida. I love Miami myself. I would never live in the conservative parts of Florida, but I love Miami. I love the food. I love the weather. I love the diversity of people and you know, speaking Spanish with all the Cuban Americans that are down there. You know, are lots of Argentinians. I don't know that it's any big indictment on conservatism, on liberalism, that you go to Miami. It's one of the most liberal places, especially eastern Miami-Dade County. The other, some people focused on the fact that her partner was wearing sandals and you could see his feet. It was very, very strange. And then AOC shot back. A lot of these people that are mad, they actually want to date me, which I thought it was a little bit weird, a little bit pompous and presumptuous, but I just don't really care about it. But a very interesting thing happened, which is that on Fox News, reporter Charlie Gasparino actually said, to be honest with you, the criticism AOC is getting is unfair. And the anchor didn't like it and started arguing with Charlie Gasparino, who was just very honest. Take a look at this. The entire segment is called Rules for Thee, Not for Me, by the way. And AOC was eating outside without a mask. I mean, that's allowed everywhere. I don't even know what is unfair about that.
Well, it seems AOC is A-okay with ditching the mask when in Miami, at least.
She's sitting outside. What does that mean? She's okay. What are you talking about? Now there's video of her outside hugging someone.
Well, that was the New York congresswoman. Music playing in the background, partying up, dropping the cover while partying at that crowded bar there in Florida. Critics are calling her a hypocrite as COVID cases spike back in her home state of New York.
And by the way, cases are spiking in Florida, too. But hospitalizations are up 200%. Like, even the whole framing is crazy. But let's get into the meat.
Sperino joins us now. So, Charlie, is it fair that many are calling her out for being a hypocrite while partying it up in Florida while her home state is battling a record COVID surge?
To be honest with you, no. Yeah, it is unfair. I don't see why she can't go to Florida and have a good time. I mean, I kind of wish I was
Nobody
there, but I was
can't.
In court. I was personally in COVID quarantine.
So what exactly is the hypocrisy? Is it she wasn't wearing a mask outside because basically no one is? Is it that she went to a different what is the hypocrisy exactly?
Listen, it's hypocrisy if she's sitting around talking about what a bad job DeSantis is doing, the governor DeSantis of Florida is doing, as opposed to what a great job Governor Hochul in New York is doing. Then it would be hypocritical for her to go and party in the place in the center of evil.
Let
so
me
speak,
make this simple, Charlie. She's been very supportive of a very...
The anchor does not like that Charlie Gasparino is off message here.
Charlie, she's been very supportive of very strict measures in her home state to fight the coronavirus pandemic.
Right.
Florida, many Democrats have been very critical of Florida that has been more relaxed on some of those measures. She is choosing to vacation there and live it up without her mask on and kiss and hug. That's the hypocrisy being questioned.
This is a Fox News alert. I am going to support AOC on this. And here's why. She was outside. I mean, I don't think she's, unless you could show me, you know, some tweet or some statement from her saying, I think people even outside when they go jogging, when they eat outside, should have face mask on. Yeah. Then it's not hypocritical because she's outside.
And by the way, you can be critical of Florida in terms of its lack of access to testing, because you would like to see schools take some. If you go to Miami and sit outside at a restaurant, you're not really being hypocritical. I mean, it's just what was incredible was the degree to which this was story number one on Fox News. I mean, look at some of the coverage of this.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez accused of hypocrisy.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of hypocrisy.
Rules for thee, but not for me.
AOC.
Maybe AOC needs to go back to the border.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
The heat. AOC is getting.
By the way, this is all within a 7-hour period.
Ocasio-Cortez,
the so-called squad member.
Furthermore, I want to talk about AOC.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
She said the Republicans were like hot for her body.
Brian, the Motley Crue song, right? Girl, don't go away, man. Just go away. Don't come down here. Why are you coming down here?
AOC says that you just are sexually frustrated. You want to date her. That you want to date communists. So tell me about that.
She says they're mad because they can't date her. Sean Duffy.
Now, I do admit that they're mad because they can't date her. It comes off as a little bit arrogant. It's probably true with some of them, by the way. But it's not the type of thing you're supposed to say. So another fabricated story. And again, I do think Charlie Gasparino is right. If she was indoors at some big concert with no mask, I think it would be different. But many of us all along have been saying there should be testing. We're fine with vaccine mandates. You should wear masks indoors, blah, 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 blah. But no one's really getting this outdoors and sitting outdoors. And in fact, going to a warm place and where it's easier to sit outdoors seems like a completely coherent thing to do, given that belief. I'm not even a big defender of AOC, but this was very, very stupid. All right. I have something for you today that I think some of you are going to think is funny, but it's really not. It's actually really, really horrifying. I don't know how many of you remember this guy, Stu Peters. We're going to look back at a clip from a couple weeks ago where Stu Peters said he believes that the flu or COVID that he got was given to him deliberately like a weapon. And he said that without any evidence. He interviewed yesterday an anti-vaccine actress known as Crystal Tini. That's Crystal Tini, who there's no way for me to say this without just saying what it is. She claims that when she's near vaccinated people, she has anal bleeding. Okay. She believes that symptom is being caused by people shedding the vaccine onto her, that it causes anal bleeding. She's a dancer, model, choreographer type person, hairstylist, I think. She has hair accessories and makes yoga elements. And she is anti-vax. Take a listen to what she had to say. Listen carefully because she uses coded language.
Insanely alarming.
Clots.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, well, that is absolutely alarming. Have you visited with a doctor, a physician, and talked about this? Or, I mean, have you made up in your own mind that if you were to go speak to a doctor, that they would tell you that you're nuts, that this just doesn't happen, that this doesn't exist, despite the fact that it's proven that it does exist? Yeah. Several experts have said that. Is that why you're hesitant to go, or have you gone?
I have not gone. And people like family, maybe you should go to the doctor, but I know exactly what they're going to say. And especially because I am not vaccinated, they're going to say that it's no relation. And I'm not going to waste my time doing that after all the research that I've done. And I know that you have done. We do know that there is a relation to it. And I actually did a video like way back when, in the very beginning, when people started getting vaccinated and noticing problems with their menstrual cycles and things like that. Now, for me, obviously, there are people getting nosebleeds, anal bleeding and vaginal bleeding. I will do the process of elimination. I am not vaginally bleeding or bleeding from the nose. So,
okay, so understand what she says. She says some people are getting nosebleeds, vaginal bleeding or anal bleeding. I'm not getting vaginal and I'm not getting nose bleeding. So she's saying I'm getting anal bleeding when I'm near vaccinated people.
The fact that it is something more serious, since obviously women menstruate, and it's really, really scary. So I'm not going to go to a doctor. It does resolve over a period of time. It's been almost a week and I am still experiencing the symptoms.
So guys, I'm not joking around here. If she's telling the truth, this could be colon cancer. It could be a bunch of other things. If she's just lying and saying being near, she's not even saying these are side effects from getting vaccinated. She's saying these are side effects from being near vaccinated people. When she goes near a vaccinated person, she has anal bleeding for a week and then it resolves, she says. If she's lying, then it's crazy. If she's telling the truth, she really needs to be evaluated. I mean, I'm not kidding around. And this is maybe the craziest show I've ever seen. This is a reminder of when Stu Peters claimed that someone infected him deliberately with the virus, as opposed to like he just caught it.
I wouldn't be surprised if this so-called cold, the virus, the flu that I have right now, was a targeted attack on me. Do you speculate that some of that might be going on as well?
Right.
A targeted attack?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like the bioweapon being released on you, this sociopath, yeah. Tony Fauci, when he chimerically engineered this taxpayer-funded, wow. Lab-originated, intentionally released Wuhan, China virus.
And I should make clear, just so we don't get in any trouble on YouTube, the claims being made right now by Stu Peters are untrue.
I mean, that can probably be used against people automatically. I mean, people, Republicans, conservatives, talk show host people being, yeah. targeted with this virus.
Okay, anyway, you guys get it. He caught a virus against which he was not vaccinated, and he says it must have been a targeted attack. Really scary stuff. If these people really believe this stuff, then they do need to be medically evaluated. If they are just lying, then it's extremely immoral what they are doing. We have a voicemail number. That number is 2192-DAVID-P. This caller asks a good question, which is, would Joe Rogan ever have me back on his show, given that I have been critical of him about his statements about COVID and the pandemic? Take a listen.
Hey, David, this is Anthony from New Jersey. I just listened to your podcast today, and you played that clip with Rogan interviewing the guy who claims he invented the mRNA vaccine. I was just wondering, is there a chance that you're ever going to go on Rogan or have Rogan come on your show so you could just call him out on his nonsense? I mean, he just sits there like an idiot, like a bump on a log, while these guys just spew out garbage. And he doesn't even do anything to, you know, form a rebuttal. It almost seems like he agrees with it half the time. We need somebody, a man of your caliber, to go on there and tell this stoned idiot, you know, that he needs to wake up.
Well, listen, I don't know that we need the ad hominems. I know that there are other people in my space who have opted not to critique the things Joe Rogan has said. And some of them privately will message me and say that critique you did of Joe Rogan was really good. I don't know why that's their choice. I know that to some degree with someone with such a big show as Rogan, you want to maintain the possibility at least of being invited on. It would be very notable if I was not criticizing the things Rogan was saying, because I'm obviously aware of them. I've been on his show a couple of times. As I've said before, I have no idea if Rogan is even aware of the things I have said about his coverage. If he is, he may be very willing to talk to me and we would just have adult conversations about these things. And I would tell him the same thing to his face that I say on the show. It's not a big deal. I'm comfortable disagreeing with people. It's not a big deal. He may be mad in some way or you know, have written me off, or he may have no idea whatsoever. I am glad to go back absolutely anytime. Okay. On the bonus show today, I will explain, many of you noticing, that I do have a Band-Aid on my finger. It is actually quite a story what happened. I am going to explain that on today's bonus show. We're going to talk about Ted Cruz's impeachment promise. You can probably guess what it is. And we will also talk about flu-rona. Flu-rona has been detected, a combination flu-coronavirus diagnosis. All of those stories and more will be on today's bonus show. Access the bonus show by signing up at joinpacman.com. You can use the coupon code WOW22. You have to say it that way when you type it in. WOW22. W-O-W-22. You will save big, and we'll see you on today's bonus show.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
RCT Pittsburgh. Meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
A year later, the country is still living in the shadow of January 6th. The trail that began for me in Charlottesville has taken another turn. Along the way, I've seen up close the peril posed by a resurgent white supremacist movement. Our militias pledging to execute police and elected officials. Ultra-nationalists brawling in the streets. Would-be revolutionaries wearing Hawaiian shirts. And now this, millions of people convinced that the 2020 election was a fraud.
Thursday marks the first anniversary of the deadly January 6th insurrection, when thousands attacked the U.S. Capitol with the goal of overthrowing the 2020 election. Many were part of far-right extremist and white supremacist groups. We'll look at the threat they pose today with an investigation by Frontline into the American insurrection. Then, is the smoking gun in Trump's January 6th attempted coup hiding in plain sight? We speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Will Bunch of the Philadelphia Inquirer. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Chicago's canceled school for today after the Chicago Teachers Union voted Tuesday night for classes to go remote due to the surge in COVID-19 cases. In a statement, the union said, quote, "This decision was made with a heavy heart and a singular focus on student and community safety," unquote. This comes as schools across the nation are grappling with how to keep students and teachers safe as the Omicron variant rapidly spreads. In suburban Chicago, one district had to close five schools Tuesday because more than 500 teachers and staff were out sick. In Florida, thousands of teachers have called out sick as COVID cases skyrocket. in the Miami area. On Tuesday, President Biden reiterated his support for keeping schools open during the COVID surge.
We know that our kids can be safe when in school, by the way. That's why I believe schools should remain open.
The Centers for Disease Control has decided to largely stick with its new COVID isolation guidance, saying people with asymptomatic infections can stop isolating after 5 days, down from 10 days. On Tuesday, the CDC said infected people could take a rapid test before ending isolation, but the agency is not mandating it. Meanwhile, new government data shows 113,000 people are now hospitalized with COVID-19, higher than during the Delta surge over the summer. In international news, officials in India have announced a weekend curfew in New Delhi as COVID cases reach a 9-month high. Between Friday night and Monday morning, all non-essential businesses will be closed in India's largest city. Meanwhile, Hong Kong's banning flights from the United States, Britain, and 6 other countries for the next 2 weeks. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection is asking Sean Hannity, the Fox News host and close confidant of Donald Trump, to voluntarily cooperate with its investigation. In a letter, the committee said it believed Hannity had, quote, advanced knowledge regarding President Trump's and his legal team's planning for January 6th, unquote. On Tuesday, the committee released a number of text messages sent by Hannity to White House officials before and after the insurrection. On January 5th, Hannity wrote to White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows saying he was, quote, very worried about the next 48 hours, unquote. Shortly after the news broke about Hannity's text messages, Donald Trump canceled a news conference he scheduled for Thursday on the first anniversary of the insurrection. The January 6th committee has also indicated it hopes to